Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Fears are growing that Ireland and other EU states will have to accept the 10% baseline tariff introduced by US President Donald Trump in the interests of reaching a US-EU trade deal. Now, the EU Trade Commissioner Maro Sefcovic is travelling to Washington today for discussions with senior US officials ahead of the deadline next Wednesday. The Taoiseach Simon Harris is expected to update Cabinet this morning on the talks, and it's understood he'll say that there's positive momentum emerging and that the government is hoping to secure zero-for-zero arrangements for key sectors. But if the talks fail, the US has threatened that 50% tariffs will apply to all EU goods, while the EU has said it will respond with a raft of countermeasures. Well, in a moment, we're going to hear about how Irish companies are preparing for all of this. But let's get the latest now. I'm joined on the line by Bloomberg's Brussels Bureau Chief, Suzanne Lynch. Good morning, Suzanne.
Good morning, Claire.
Does this feel today really close to the wire, or has enough groundwork been done, in your view, to reach some sort of a deal next week?
Well, I think it really is crunch time for these talks. As you mentioned there, Maro Sefcovic is going to Washington, but there's already a negotiation team there from the EU in Washington trying to hammer out this deal with Sefcovic flying in. He'll join them tomorrow for meetings and then we'll report back to EU member states via ambassadors on Friday. So it does really seem to be gaining momentum. Now, the key issue is that this 10% universal tariff that's there, we're reporting now that the EU is more or less prepared to accept that. However, the bigger issue or a parallel issue is that there are sanctions or tariffs on other sectors, so-called sectoral tariffs. So, for example, 50% tariff on steel and aluminium and 25% tariffs on automobiles. So the EU is going to have to try and get something on that to bring those tariffs down, as well as find out from the Washington, are these threatened tariffs on pharma going to happen? So that's one side of it. And if those were resolved in a way that the EU can accept, well, then it's likely that the EU would sign up for the universal 10% tariff. So that's kind of where the discussions are from the EU side. Of course, the big question is, what does Washington think? Is it prepared to sign up to any of these? There's a number of scenarios now the EU are working on, and one of them is that Donald Trump walks away from this, that he doesn't want to do a deal, and he says no. In that case, the EU it's ready with some countermeasures, as you mentioned there, billions of euros worth of countermeasures that it would impose. But then some countries are worried that if the EU did that, well, then that could lead to more tit for tat. So It's a very delicate conversation in terms of the EU trying to get the best deal, obviously, for the European Union, but then different countries having different priorities in terms of how you should go about that.
And different countries have different views as well on how you deal with Donald Trump and his administration, you know, how much you stand up to him. We know that he responds well to flattery. Are you getting any sense that Maro Sefcovic is heading off today on a charm offensive, or is he going to bring the tough guy persona? How is he going to deal with this in Washington?
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, this has been one of the debates here. Like, for example, we have seen the German Chancellor Friedrich Merz here at the EU summit last week. He very much wants a quick deal on this. You know, he thinks we should move. Other countries like France feel that, you know, the EU is coming from a very strong position. And the French commissioner, Stéphane Séjourné, you know, last week was talking about hitting Boeing, for example, as one of the countermeasures. So it's more tough talk coming from France. Now, when it comes to this deal, Sefcovic is obviously meeting his peers, but, you know, we're nowhere near or a meeting has not taken place, obviously, yet. A substantive meeting between Ursula von der Leyen, the head of the European Commission, and Donald Trump. We don't know if that's going to happen, if it's ever going to happen, quite frankly. But you can be sure that there will be conversations happening between the highest levels of the European Commission and leaders, prime ministers across Europe, you know, as this deal starts to take shape, so that, you know, the European Commission knows that they're on the same page, that member states are happy with what it's doing effectively. And we saw the beginning of that conversation last week at the summit when Ursula von der Leyen debriefed countries and prime ministers and also, you know, listened to what countries were prepared to take. But you're right in the sense that we saw last week at NATO, obviously Mark Rutte, it was very controversial. He very much lashed on the flattery to Trump, but arguably it worked. You know, but that Trump came back happy. He's committed to NATO. He signed the document and he presented it as a deal, as an achievement to his electorate. So, I mean, there's two ways of looking at that. But yeah, flattery does seem to work.
And our own Tony Connolly this morning saying that the Commission has told member states that in response to the question, you know, will there be stability now? And the answer was stark, according to Tony, that won't happen. I mean, is it accepted now that from here on, chaos will reign when it comes to the relationship between the EU and the US?
Yeah, it's a difficult one and it's crucial to the whole conversation. I mean, this is one of the principles, if you like, that the EU is going into these talks with, saying, you know, we're not going to agree to this unless we have clarity, essentially, on what's coming after. You know, if we sign up to this and accept a universal 10% tariff, for example, we need to be assured about any future tariffs that Washington may be planning, and we need to address this up front. So now, ultimately, as we know, this is a decision. I mean, Donald Trump is not involved in the weeds from what we can tell at the moment, but obviously this is a decision for the White House, for Donald Trump. So, you know, that is going to be one of the tasks now by the EU to see, do they have enough? Do they have enough promises, and are they ready to sign up to this deal? Because as I said, there are some countries that believe, well, hang on, we need to hold our, you know, we need to hold strong here. The European Union is a market of 450 million people. We can hit US exporters. I mean, the other issue here is that it seems to be clear from the Trump administration that they are a priority for them is digital regulation and digital tax and protecting US tech companies. Now, the EU has many measures to regulate tech, particularly these two measures, the DSA and the DMA. They're quite technical regulations. But Washington has made it clear they're not happy with those regulations. But the EU has said strongly that it's not prepared to change those, that those rules are there and they're going to stay. So one thing to watch is whether the Trump administration pushes for changes on that. Mm-hmm. And then some European countries obviously also have their own digital taxes on America, and will they bring that into the conversation?
You know, when Donald Trump got that nickname, Taco, Trump always chickens out. Suzanne, this was on the back of his decision to push the tariff deadline out. And there were some hopes that we would get another extension past the 9th of July. Now, Cliff Taylor is writing that we've gone from Trump always chickens out to Trump always gets his way. But is the best we can hope for now an extension to the deadline, or is that on the agenda, does the EU feel?
I think it's a possibility that there'll be an extension, that will be some kind of interim measures. But then, you know, as Tony Connolly was saying there exactly, I mean, do you open up a bit of uncertainty? But that's also bad for the US. I mean, the dollar has been very weak. The European stock markets have outperformed the US stock markets in the last few months. So, you know, Donald Trump must know himself that this uncertainty also impacts his own economy. So there are reports now this morning coming from Washington that, you know, the Trump administration is kind of narrowing its focus, and it itself does want to get this kind of sorted next week. And it's not just the EU. Obviously, the EU is a big trading partner. But India, for example, is close to, you know, agreeing some kind of a trade deal with the US in the next few days. Japan, there are other big trading partners for the US that are also subject to this deadline. So the attention will be spread in Washington as we approach this deadline.
Suzanne, thank you very much for joining us on the programme. Suzanne Lynch there, who is Brussels Bureau Chief with Bloomberg. And I'm joined on the line now by Carol Lynch, who's partner in charge of international trade and customs at BDO. And Damien Heary, who specialises in helping Irish brands adapt, survive and succeed at Futa Vista. And thank you very much, both Carol and Damien, for joining us. Carol, just to come back to that point that we ended on with Suzanne, do Irish companies want an extension to that deadline past the 9th of July? Would that be the best outcome at this stage, given the way things are playing out?
It's a hard one to call. If the 10% could get removed, that would be the ideal situation. So you've kind of got a mixture of things going on at the moment. And a lot of within all that, there's a lot of uncertainty as to how to plan ahead. So you have your 10% universal tariff, which is being charged on Irish companies at the moment exporting to the US outside of the pharma sector and semiconductors. Then you've got 25% potential risk coming in and under the Section 232 tariffs under the investigations for, again, the carve-out areas, so pharmaceuticals, semiconductors, and actually aviation as well. So if the EU could agree a zero-for-zero tariff deal and that 10% could be removed, obviously we'd want that as soon as possible, so you don't want an extension beyond 9th of July. If, however, the talks are get into trouble or it looks like there's a risk of either party walking away, you don't then want that to happen. You need an extension. So it's very difficult at the moment.
And what's the thinking on zero for zero? I saw Simon Harris this morning saying that's still the hope from his perspective, and he's entitled to say that. But I think it was about 2 weeks ago when we were reading lines from a business, a German business newspaper, saying that really that was accepted at the very highest levels in the EU, that it just wasn't on the agenda and was very unlikely to happen. And in fact, the best we could hope for was 10%.
Yeah, I think the general feeling is that the best we can hope for is 10%. What we have with the 10% is an interesting one because it actually has been judged to be unconstitutional by the courts in the US, and it's under appeal from the US government. So ultimately, that could in fact be thrown out by the Supreme Court as being unconstitutional. So that may not continue in its current form. But of course, then President Trump could come up with some other way of doing it. But then if you look for zero tariffs, it never really seemed to gain traction as an idea. So really the things on the table seem to consistently be, do we accept the 10% baseline tariff, but could there be agreement on pharmaceuticals and semiconductors in particular, or could the results of the Section 232 investigation, which is what we have on aluminium and on cars and auto parts, which charged that additional 25% duty, could they be softened? So I think that's where a big focus is. Mm-hmm.
Well, Damien, let's bring you in here. Damien Heary, thank you for being with us. We've had plenty of prior warning of the tariffs. We've had the 90-day pause, but all of this uncertainty right up to the July 9th date, it's just very unhelpful, isn't it, for companies trying to trade in this space?
Yeah, absolutely, Claire. And I think even beyond the tariffs, we need to step back a little bit. I mean, when we're talking to businesses, we're now saying we're just in an era of instability and uncertainty. You'll have heard the phrase sort of VUCA times, volatile, uncertain, complex and ambiguous. We need to move back and say we've had COVID, we've had climate events, we've had supply disruption, war, and now tariffs. This is the world we exist in. So even if there's a sort of we move to a place of certainty on tariffs, we are encouraging all the businesses we talk to scenario plan for continued uncertainty. We may not be sure where they come from, but actually starting to build that into our businesses, to build muscle around resilience and readiness for the need to pivot and move from markets or on supply side, or indeed what actually our business models are and our portfolios might be for the near future.
But regardless of what happens, I mean, there is a sense now that we're dealing with Fortress America, that's not going to have the same welcome for our products and services as it once had before. Are you telling companies to be more protectionist in their thinking and to start looking at Fortress Europe as their main market?
Yes, to a degree. I think we've moved from a world of sort of high fluidity around global trade and very pro-trade to potentially one where there's a slow trade and a high friction environment. And I think Fortress America is a phrase that's being used. And if you look at that, that potentially, if they're roughly 30% of global GDP, you look at where the big other blocks are of that, of value for potential markets. And between the EU and UK, I think we're still at around 20%. So on our home door with ideally easy fluid access to those markets, it's a large sizable market. So it's hard to look at scenarios where EU UK shouldn't be top of our priority list in terms of where we're looking to market access and opportunity as well. And then beyond that, it's what are the other markets we're starting to see opportunity in, who are now open to trade and are probably in similar situations to the EU and Ireland around having a market like America taken away from the table and trying to find opportunity elsewhere.
Like Canada?
Yeah, Canada. I think you could look at Mexico, Brazil now sitting down and talking to each other. I know if you look at our whiskey and food industries, looking to high value markets like Japan and Southeast Asia, those aren't easy to turn the tap on to, but potentially they're definitely interesting options which we need to explore, you know, not just in the short term, but in the longer, medium and longer term as well.
But in normal circumstances, Damien, you'd need years to develop a marketplace like that in a country or an area where you hadn't traded before. We're trying to do this at treble time, aren't we?
Yeah, and I think we need to be moving at two speeds here. So one is, what can we do now? And that's businesses, but also what can government do now as well? And that has to be around markets that we already have access to, are already open to us. And I think the ask and the push there is to say, how can we turn that tap on? How can we reduce any red tape or financial costs of businesses to trade or to accelerate that opportunity? That's in the now. I think in the next, it is really accelerating those negotiations and opportunities to really open up some of those markets as well. And I know, in fairness to the government, this action plan on competitiveness and productivity, they call out new markets and supporting businesses, but I think we really need to see that move from strategy to action and execution that's going to support Irish business.
And pretty quickly as well. Carol, I know you've touched on pharma and what might happen to that sector. Can you just tell me, though, what concerns you have about those potential separate tariffs that could impact pharma in Ireland?
Yeah, so the other sectors, it's what's called Section 232, and it's a national security policy that the US impose. So since President Trump came into power, we've had those imposed on steel and aluminium. So there was a Section 232 investigation there, then started a 25% duty rate being imposed. And then over the last week, that's gone up to 50% tariff. Same with cars and parts. And, you know, you'll see from Germany, they're very concerned about those 25% duties on the cars and the car parts. So those investigations challenge really the exports in a particular sector considered to be of significance and security significance to the US. And in particular for Ireland, the most critical one probably is the pharma industry. Mm-hmm. And President Trump has been fairly clear about the balance of trade deficit between Ireland and the US in terms of exports of pharmaceuticals to the US. So we're in the middle of that investigation period right now. Companies were asked to put in their views, and we don't know when the results of that investigation will come out, but they've been fairly speedy of late. So, you know, you could expect something maybe over the summer. And then if that came out at a 25% duty on pharmaceutical raw materials, and, you know, because we also export a lot of kind of intermediate products, but that whole sector is, which is usual, used to a 0% rate, then that's a significant hit on to profits. Now, there's the pharmaceutical industry does have high profit margins, so it's not going to hit as badly as if, for example, it was hitting the food and drink industry, but it's still significant.
Yep, and is likely to make a difference to the business model here, certainly. Carol Lynch and Damien Heary, thank you both for joining us. Now, still to come on the programme, a nutritionist tells us which ultra-processed foods to avoid and why some should be part of your diet. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer's troubled first year in power. And we hear from the man who says gastric surgery changed his life and the surgeon who performed the operation for him. Up next, though, should Ireland ban HHC products?
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.